I'd like to talk to us today about drama. This is one of those words that if you look it up in the dictionary, especially an old dictionary, you will get a definition that doesn't seem to fit very well in the day that we live in. In fact, if I read you the definition from my Webster's 1828 dictionary for the word drama, which if you think about 1828, there were no technological abilities at that time to portray the things that we have portrayed, can portray today with technology. We have something that is, it's beyond emerging technology, it's reality now, called AI. And AI stands for artificial intelligence. It's something that they can take my voice, and I may not use the correct terminology here, but they can synthesize it to the point that they could type up a script and feed it into the technology and equipment that they have today and cause me to say words that I didn't say. And it would sound like me because it would be my voice that they could take the tones and the inflections. And they can also take a video image of me and cause me to do things that I wouldn't do. All right? We have that technology today, but they didn't have that in the early 1800s. They didn't have that when the scripture was written. And I made my own definition up, and you'll have to tell me whether you think I'm right or not for drama. I wrote my little definition is this: it's actions and events that correlate with unrealistic imaginations, apparitions, and fantasies. Would you accept that? Does it sound valid for the time that we live in? It's actions and events that correlate or correspond with unrealistic imaginations, apparitions or fears, and fantasies. Okay? I will tell you that from personal experience, drama always, those actions and events, they always blindside the sincere. You never saw it coming. And we live in a day right now that it seems like everywhere we turn, drama is on that corner. It seems like that it, last night, we were going home from here. We'd come over and done a little cleaning and some other things here at the chapel, and we was on the way home, and I wasn't particularly in a hurry, but I was driving up my county road. I was going about 50 miles an hour, and if you're familiar with where I live, when you get past Nutmeg is the county road that goes east and west, it's only about a half a mile to the Crooked Bridge. And you got to go be going slow to go across that. And this fella in a pickup truck pulls out and passed me on the county road. I don't know how fast he was going, but he disappeared in a hurry. And, of course, in that last half a mile, I mean, he passed me right about Nutmeg. And he must have been going 70 or 75. And he had to shut it down to get across the bridge. He made it. I'm thankful I didn't come up on a wreck, but anyway, drama will come up from behind us. It'll meet us head on. It seems like if we turn the corner, there's some more drama. And many, many, many times, it's not because of our own doing. It's just drama. It's happening. It's events, it's actions of other people and the world around us. And it all correlates with somebody else's unrealistic imaginations, their fears, or their fantasies, their dreams, the things that is floating around in their head that shouldn't be floating around in their head. Whether it's dreams, whether it's fears, or whether it's just, you know, imagination. That's the biggest nation in the whole earth. Did you know that? And it can cause a lot of trouble in people's lives. I would like to make two statements in beginning. Drama of our own making is avoidable. I want us to remember that. Drama of our own making is avoidable. And drama of circumstances or the making of others is not avoidable, but we still have to deal with it. Now, you're probably thinking, how in the world are we going to connect this to the Bible? But I found, and I was actually studying something else for a different subject, and it just, this thought seemed to start unfolding in my mind about we have the majority of one book in the Bible is dealing with a man's life that has a lot of drama in it. And they didn't call it drama back then. And it seems like drama, in the definition I gave you for it, is much more popular now than it was when I was a child. In fact, I don't remember drama being used very much when I was a young person. But now, it's a pretty common statement. We also have other things like panic attacks and other things like that that I don't, it's become more popular in our world today. I use the word popular because maybe it's been there all along, just like drama has been, and we've just labeled it differently. I don't know. But I know that however imaginary we want to paint drama, the effects of drama is very real. And all of us here, no matter how sincere, no matter how stoic, no matter how calm, cool, and collected you try to be yourself, drama is going to impact you. I would like for us to look at this man's life and consider the things that happened to him and the things that he could have done better to help his life. Because I'm going to tell you, he had a very dramatic life. In fact, and he's a very important person in the scripture. In fact, there is a country today named after him. All right? So I'd like to go to Genesis. We're going to spend most of our time in the book of Genesis this morning. I'd like to turn to the 25th chapter of Genesis. I would like to introduce you to the story here. There was a man by the name of Abraham. Y'all know that name. And Abraham didn't have a son until, or the son of promise, until he was 100 years old, thereabouts. And he had one son by his wife Sarah. And his wife Sarah bore him a son by the name of Isaac. Isaac almost died. We talked about him the other day because he had been called. God asked Abraham to offer Isaac a sacrifice. Thankfully, the Lord had another plan. He was testing Abraham's devotion and his trust in him. And then Isaac didn't have a child. He didn't marry until he was 40 years old, I believe the scripture tells us. And Rebecca, his wife, wasn't able to have children. And he sought the Lord for that. And the Lord allowed her to conceive, is the word the Bible uses. And we'll pick up the story in Genesis chapter 25 and verse 22 is the one I want to read, I believe. Maybe verse 21. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And the children struggled within her, and she said, "If it be so, why am I thus?" And she went to inquire of the Lord. So not only did she conceive, but she had twins. And the twins' name, when they were born, they were named Jacob and Esau. Esau was born first, although we usually say this as Jacob and Esau. Usually if it's the older one, we would say Esau and Jacob. But apparently there was a conflict in between the two unborn children in their mother. And I don't know what that conflict was, but Rebecca was uncomfortable, all right? There was something, some physical contest going on. And the man I want us to talk about in his life is Jacob today. And Jacob, the conflict between he and Esau in the unborn state, because he was an innocent child, I have to believe that that dramatic event was not Jacob's fault. It had nothing to do with him, although he was there. And although I don't know why it was, and maybe it was nothing out of the ordinary, maybe it was because this was the first time that Rebecca was to have a child, and she didn't know what to experience, and she, I don't know, maybe it was something that was abnormal. But there was something going on there that was causing her to be distressed. You know, there's a lot of things that happen are to us and around us that cause us to be distressed, and sometimes we call it drama. We say there's a lot of drama in my life. There's events going on that causes me to be insecure, not restful. It's not peaceful. It wasn't a peaceful situation, but I don't believe that we can say it was Jacob's fault. Okay? Jacob wasn't necessarily the instigator. Maybe it was all in self-defense. I don't know. But I want to move on here, and I want to set the precedence that Jacob had a lot of things going on in his life that could have caused him to be emotionally upset. If we skip on down to the 28th verse of the same chapter, some of these chapters cover a lot of territory and time-wise, and others don't. But we look in the 28th verse, and it says, Isaac, that was the father's name, loved Esau because he did eat of his venison. So obviously, Esau has been born, and he is matured enough that he can go hunting and bring venison into his father. And it says, but Rebekah loved Jacob. What do you think the setting was there? Isaac loved Esau, and Rebecca, the mother, loved Jacob. Does anything about that sound like maybe it shouldn't have been that way? So we have two little boys in the same household in this congregation, and what if we said, Brother Paul loves Declan, and Sister Natasha loves Lachlan? What if we said that? We would think that there was some kind of preferences made in that house, right? And there was something going on here. Instead of loving these children equally and parenting them equally, there was constantly a line being drawn in the sand, so to speak. This is my son, and this is mine over here. And you're being unreasonable with this one, or you're setting too high expectations for that one. And there was this thing that was going on in the household. Was it Jacob's issue or Esau's issue? It wasn't. It was circumstances. It just happens that circumstance was the home and the parents. Did you know that we as parents can set the stage for our children to have drama in their life or not to have drama in their life? So Isaac and Rebekah were doing some things. I'm not trying to discredit any of the patriarchs in our minds this morning, but I want us to just grasp the concept of everyday life. And when the scripture says that one parent loved one and the other one loved the other, it sounds like that instead of treating them as equals, they were made aware of things like seniority and privileges and things of that nature. Why would you have a set of twins and constantly remind them who was the oldest? Today, I know multiple families that have twins in them, and I've never been told, well, this is the older sister, or this is the older brother. Or I've never had a set of twins. I went to school with some folks that were twins, and I never had one of them say to me, well, this is my little brother. I never had that. You know, the wisest thing to happen if you had twins born into your home is to treat them like they're the same. To treat your children equal. I don't want to try to preach too many messages at once here this morning, but to teach your children to be treated equal is one of the wisest things you can do as a parent. But obviously that wasn't what was happening. So Jacob and Esau grew up feeling like they were at odds with one another when they really shouldn't have felt that way. You know, the Lord told Rebekah, there's going to be two nations that's born. There could have been two nations going in the right direction instead of at odds with one another. That's my opinion, okay? That's my opinion. But both of them were descendants of Abraham, right? And Abraham's descendants were to be God's people. And I don't know how we would have merged the names of Jacob and Esau together and had a group of people, and I'm not trying to get out there too far in hypothetical things, but I want you to understand today that there was something that was set there that was introduced drama into those young children's lives that I feel like was unnecessary. I'd like to turn a page or two. Actually, I just want to skip on down here to verse 30 and begin reading in verse 30. It says, "And Esau said to Jacob," now the setting here is Esau had been out in the woods and doing whatever he was doing, and he come in and he was hungry. And Esau said to Jacob, "Feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint." Therefore was his name called Edom. And Jacob said, "Sell me this day thy birthright." Now, stop and think about this just a minute. If you got two brothers living in the same household, they care about one another, and they're looking out for one another. I'm talking about the right type of household. If one of them come in and said, I'm hungry, you got anything to eat around this place? What would the other brother typically, what would we want our two sons to do? I got a bag of Oreos. You want some of them? I got some red pottage here. Would you like a bowl of my soup? But immediately what happened was that Jacob said, I'll give you some of my pottage, but today it's going to cost you your birthright. What kind of deal is that? You know, that I don't believe that deal would have ever come up if they hadn't have been set at odds with one another. But here we got drama, this unrealistic thing that's going on in the environment around them, and now they're part of the problem. Now they're part of the problem. Jacob said, I'll give you something to eat, but sell me. That'd be like me coming over to your place and saying, I haven't had anything to eat all day. Brother David, I am hungry. Brother David said, well, I got a tuna fish sandwich, but I tell you what, sign the title over to your truck and I'll give you a tuna fish sandwich. Now, I don't know about Esau, but if he not ate all day, don't you think he could have lasted just a little bit longer? I don't know. I don't know what caused him to say, let's read the rest of it. And Esau said, behold, I'm at the point to die. How do you get to the point to die in 24 hours from the lack of food? And what profit shall this birthright do to me? And Jacob said, swear to me this day. And he sware unto him and sold him his birthright for a bowl of soup. That's my words. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, of all things. It didn't even have any meat in it. Doesn't sound like it. And he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. That's the key. Esau was being dramatic in that this birthright is not worth anything to me. I'm about to starve to death. Well, my perception is he wasn't about to starve to death. He was just hungry. Okay? But he said, I don't even want... Doesn't this sound like some of the drama we get into today? People come, what good is this going to do, right, if I don't get what I want? And they make an irrational decision in a dramatic episode that they pay for life. It happens all around us. But both of these boys, although they may have been introduced to some drama because of how one parent loving one more than the other one and vice versa, now they're players in the game. They both added fuel to this fire. Jacob said, I'll sell you some food, all right, but you're going to pay a big price. And the other one said, I don't know what good that's going to do. He disdained the value. Brother David, no offense, you might have the best tuna fish sandwich out there, but I don't care how hungry I am, I'm going to somehow make it. I'm not going to give you my truck for a tuna fish sandwich. Just so that's clear. So later on, Esau accused Jacob of tricking him into giving it to him. Doesn't that sound like drama? And we can go to the 27th chapter, and Jacob followed his mother's instruction, and he put the lambskin on his hands and his neck and all of that, because Esau happened to be a person that had a lot of hair on his body, and Jacob didn't. He was born that way. It's what the Bible tells us. I'm just going on the story that we got to work with. So his mother's advice was, when his dad came down to the point that he was going to bestow the inheritance or the blessing on them, he told Esau to go out and kill some of that venison that he liked so much, that made him the favorite son, and prepare it for him. So his mother overheard it, said, "Jacob, you go get me a lamb. I'll fix it just like your daddy likes." That's where Esau learned how to do it anyway, is from his mother. So she said, "Go get me a lamb." And then they skinned the lamb carefully, and she put that lamb skin on him. I don't know how it all worked, but somehow they fooled Isaac. And Isaac gave the oldest son's blessing to Jacob. Here again, why did they separate? Why did they make one the older than the other one? They were twins, okay? They was born on the same day, very likely. So in the 29th, that's in the 27th chapter. We'll fast forward to this. Jacob was party to that. What I mean by party, he was part of that drama. He entered into that. He followed his mother's instruction. Yes, there was a purpose behind it. Yes, there was an intent behind it. And I'm not trying to rewrite the scriptures. I want us to focus this morning on the drama that was going on in this household. I'm not trying to contest the validity of the scriptures and the purpose God had in making a nation out of Jacob. So in the 29th chapter, because Jacob ran away from Esau, Esau threatened to kill him. Isn't that what a lot of the dramatic events happen in our world today? Drama's happening, and it escalates to a point to where somebody is threatening to kill somebody else. Is that that happens, doesn't it? Just because of drama. Because somebody cheated them out of a bowl of soup or something. That's what it come down to. It was a bowl of soup. And so Esau threatened to kill Jacob. And Jacob's mother said, "You better leave. He's going to kill you. He's taking a vow. He's going to kill you." And so she went in and smoothed things over and got her husband, Isaac, to authorize him to go looking for a wife and told him where he's supposed to go look. So he did. And he found someone. She fit all the criteria that his father had for him. And she was beautiful. And her name was Rachel. You remember that story? And, well, I'll tell you some of it. I'm not going to read all this because we'd be reading several chapters in the book of Genesis. This is in the 29th chapter. His future father-in-law's name was Laban. Laban had two daughters. Here again, he had an older daughter and a younger daughter. They weren't twins, though. The younger daughter was the one that was most attractive, at least to Jacob. And neither one of them were married. And he agreed to work for Laban, take care of his flocks and herds for 7 years to be able to marry Rachel. And at the end of 7 years, they had a wedding. And it just so happened that how this all happened, I don't know, but Laban switched the girls up, and he got Leah. He didn't get Rachel. Now, that'd be disappointment, wouldn't it? And Laban tricked Jacob. Was that Jacob's fault? No, it wasn't Jacob's fault. Laban says, "I can't marry the younger one without the older one having a husband. But if you'll work for me another 7 years, I'll give you Rachel too." So he worked another 7 years and another wedding, and now he's got Rachel. And he gave both of his girls a handmaid to go with them, help them out. Four women, one man in the same house. That's a recipe for some drama. So, turns out, that's in the 29th chapter of Genesis. If we read the first verse of the 30th chapter, Rachel saw, this is just the scripture, folks. I'm not making this up. And when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel. Remember, Rachel is the one that Jacob really loved. She was the most beautiful of the two in Jacob's eyes. And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, "Am I God, stead, who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb?" And she said, "Behold, my maid Bilhah, go in unto her, and she shall bear upon my knees, and I may also have children by her." Now, obviously, Rachel was a member of the imagination. And in her imagination, she figured out that she could have children even though it was by her handmaid or her servant. And Jacob conformed to the drama. She said to him, "Give me children or I'm going to die." Pretty dramatic, isn't it? Esau said, "You tricked me, now I'm going to kill you." A lot of drama in Jacob's life. And this is what happened. And her handmaid had a child. In fact, she had two children. And I guess Rachel claimed them both. I don't know how that all happened, but then Leah didn't have any more children for a while, and she introduced her handmaid to the recipe. Jacob had two children by her handmaid, too. I'd like to go down to the 15th verse of the 30th chapter, maybe 14th verse. And Reuben, that was the firstborn of Leah's, Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them into this his mother. Then Rachel said to Leah, "Give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrakes." One sister asking the other sister that just happened to be the wives of the same man. That's what the scripture is all about. Ask a simple question. "Could I have some of your son's mandrakes?" A mandrake was a blossoming plant, had a flower on it, and it was believed to be like to help with fertility. And so there was a reason that Rachel wanted that, because she wanted a child. Even though she'd already had two children by her handmaid with her husband, if that's not drama, I don't know what is, but she wanted one of her own. And Leah said in verse 15, and she said unto her, "It is a small matter that thou hast taken my husband, and wouldest thou take away my son's mandrakes also?" And Rachel said, "Therefore, he shall lie with thee tonight for thy son's mandrakes." There's a lot of other things that go on in these verses besides what I'm explaining to you, but there was conflict, there was drama every day in that household. I think you get the picture by now. Decisions that Jacob made because of decisions his parents made caused the drama to just begin to escalate and escalate and escalate. And in verse 41 is where Jacob is endeavoring to leave his father-in-law's presence and go back to his homeland where he should have went back. And more drama happened. In verse 41, it's 30th chapter, and it came to pass whensoever the stronger, 31 and 41 is what I want to read. I'm sorry. Jacob says, "Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I have served thee 14 years for thy two daughters and 6 years for thy cattle. Thou hast changed my wages 10 times. That sounds like there's been a lot of drama going on. "Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hadst sent me away now empty. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked thee yesternight. So he left Laban and he was traveling home, and he had amassed quite a, he went there with almost nothing, and he went away with 11 sons, at least, maybe 10 sons at this point. And he went away with herds, flocks, possessions. And he's going home. He'd been there 20 years. He was a man that was in the prime of his life, had used all of his knowledge and his skills in herdsmanship and all of those things. And yet he had all this drama going on at the house, so to speak, in his home. You know, I'm reading this story out of the scripture, and I believe that there, God had a purpose in all of it. And please, please understand me. I'm not criticizing the scripture or the story that happened. But you know, I believe God could have raised up a great nation, and Jacob could have had 12 sons and one wife. You know? If some different decisions had been made. If choices to avoid drama. You see how drama impacts us? But it don't stop there. In the 32nd chapter, we have Jacob preparing to meet Esau, because remember 20 years ago when he left, Esau said, I'm going to kill him. And he began to send presents. He sent out somebody to scout out where Esau was, and Esau heard he was coming home, and he was coming to meet him, but he wasn't coming by himself. He was bringing 400 men with him. You think they was bringing balloons and confetti? No, they weren't. They had their armor on, and they were coming to meet him. He still remembered how Jacob had tricked him and got his father's blessings. He remembered all of that. So he's coming back with 400 men, and on the way back, Jacob starts sending gifts, and he divides up his household and his family. And in that course of that time, Jacob wrestled with an angel. You remember that? And the end of that wrestling match, he got his leg put out of joint, his hip socket, and the angel said, I'll bless you. Your name is no longer going to be Jacob, but it's going to be Israel. Israel. So from then on, his name was, we have a country by that name now. This story has been very impactful even in our modern day, has it not? It's in the news now as much as it ever has been. And this man that had so much drama, this name Israel, is in a lot of drama today. Third chapter, Esau and Jacob finally meet, and they're able to reconcile their differences on peaceful terms. Esau didn't want to take the gifts, but Jacob insisted. They were able to mend those differences, and their father had not passed away, but when he did, they were able to go together and bury him. You know how good that was? You know there's healing for drama? There's healing for drama. And I probably don't have the perfect recipe for everybody, but I know God's got a plan that He can bring healing to the drama in your life. But I'd like to point back that the drama didn't end there, because you know a household with four women, 12 sons, and at least one daughter. I think there was possibly more, but the scripture only gives us the name of one. There had to be a lot of drama, especially when there was tension between the two of the wives in particular. And because there was things of the past that hadn't been conquered. And some things Jacob learned and some things he didn't. And we learn some things and some things we don't. I'd like to turn to the 37th chapter. And I'd like for us to read the first four verses. It says, "And Jacob," this is in the book of Genesis, "and Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah," that was one of the handmaids, "and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report." I don't know what they were doing, but they had been impacted by the drama going on at home growing up. And they're with these flocks and taking care of them. And there was some tension going on. And Joseph brought this report back. And Israel loved Joseph. What does it say? "More than all his children, because he was a son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors." Oh, Joseph, or Jacob. You was raised in a household where one parent loved one and the other parent loved the other one. And here, you know, history repeats itself. And here he made Joseph a coat of many colors. I don't know what all the significance of that was, but when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. Did Jacob have control over that? Yes, he did. He didn't have control over his mother liking him and his father loving his brother. He didn't have control over that. But he had control over this. You know how easy it was for him to fall into this? Very. You know how easy it is for us to fall into some old habits that were left over from a past generation? It's very easy for us to do that. And it says here that he loved Joseph, the son of Rebekah, the one he wanted to marry in the first place, more than the others. Now, I remember a situation at our home a long time ago. The boys were all at home. And one of them was complaining about having to do something. And that the others didn't seem to have to do, he didn't think at the time. So, he was feeling sorry for himself. "Why do I have to do this?" And I said, "Well, it's because I love the others more than I do you." And my wife gasped. But the son that I said that to said, "No, you don't." He knew immediately that it wasn't true, but he also knew that he had to do what I told him he had to do. You know, may we live in a manner that if we say something like that, you know, it got the point across and it got the motivation going. But it was very scary to my wife. And at the time, she thought maybe I did the wrong thing. But anyway, may we live in a manner that our children know we love them equally. Not trying to preach two messages here, but may they know that. But Jacob's children didn't know that. Jacob didn't know that growing up. And it was so easy for him to pass that on and to love Joseph more. Get one of them a coat of many colors, you ought to have made them all one. That's what we would say today. But he didn't. And it caused problems. And it caused a problem to the point that Joseph, now that's Jacob's brothers, or Jacob's son, excuse me, Joseph was hated by his other brothers. And when he went at another time to check on his brothers, because his father said, go check on them, they said, here comes that dreamer. Let's kill him. Sound familiar? Sound like what Esau thought. So they threw him in, and Reuben, the oldest, old enough to be his dad, maybe several times over, maybe old enough to be his grandfather. Reuben, the oldest son, said, no, let's don't kill him. Just throw him in that pit. He was going to try to dig him out. And his other brothers, though, ended up selling him into slavery. And Joseph ended up in Egypt. And Joseph ended up saving the whole family. I'm going to tell you something. The trend of drama stopped with Joseph. Joseph stopped it. And we'll talk about that maybe tonight. But I want to tell you something. I want us to go to a verse that Jesus is quoted in saying. Let's go to Matthew, the 26th chapter in the New Testament. And some words of Jesus are recorded here that I think is important for us in this little thought this morning. In Matthew 26 and verse 52, it says, then said Jesus unto him, talking to Peter, because he'd pulled out his sword and he was going to defend Jesus, wasn't he? Good intents. You ever had good intents to straighten something out? Help somebody see where they was wrong. You ever had good intents? And Peter took a jab at that. And Jesus had to heal it. Jesus had to. It could have been so much worse. But Jesus stepped in and put this. Well, I'll just tell you the story. They come to get Jesus, and a servant of the high priest basically stepped up, and Peter whipped out his sword, and he was aiming for his neck, and all he got was his ear. He chopped off his ear, and Jesus stooped down and got the ear and healed his ear, put his ear back on. He said, Peter, put up your sword. And he said this in the verse 52, then said Jesus unto him, put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. You know, all of us that take jabs and add to drama is going to suffer from it. If we take jabs at drama, with drama, we're going to suffer for it. He said, put your sword up, Peter. It's not a time to make a stab at somebody. You ever had hurtful things said to you? I would say if you was willing, everybody in this room could raise their hand and say, I've had hurtful things said to me. I have. Not just once, multiple times. You know, there's a jab that we can come back with. You know what I mean by a jab? A boxer, a jab is one that he's just moving his arm like from his chest out like that. That's a jab, right? But you're not, very, very seldom does a boxer do a knockout with a jab. The jab takes somebody off balance to where they can come with the other hand from way back here. And they got some momentum. And that's when they come and they knock them out. But the jab knocks somebody off balance, doesn't it? So, we can make a jab. Somebody says something hurtful to us. And we can immediately turn back and say, yeah, but. That's a jab. We can respond with an accusation, and we can add to drama. You know how much, instead of responding with an accusation, what if we responded with something that was healing? Put the ear back on, so to speak. I'm going to miss you. I'm sorry you feel that way. Be sincere. Don't be sarcastic. If you say, respond, you always, you never. Lord, help us not to make a jab and add to drama. I believe that God intended for Abraham to be a father of many. I believe that God had a plan for Isaac, and I believe he had a plan for Jacob and Esau. Otherwise, he wouldn't have allowed Rebekah, that was their mother, to have twins. What better way to start a nation than with twins? That's a good way to get started, isn't it? If twins have twins, and somewhere along the line, man, that's really how to build up a nation quickly. But instead of that, there was conflict. I wonder sometimes, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe somebody with more understanding can come by and straighten me out on this and help me understand, but I wonder sometimes, could God have made two great nations that got along and were culminated in what we have today of the gospel dispensation from Jacob and Esau, instead of them being at odds? You know, I read a verse in there, I think, or it's in there, where Esau became known as Edom. You know who some of the most fierce contestants to the Israelites coming back into the Canaan land after they left Egypt? You know who they had to come up against? Edomites. You know who they were? They were descendants of Esau. They were a nation. They were a nation that stood in the way of the Israelites, the descendants of Jacob. You see how drama can be so hurtful. It can be such a powerful thing. In our lives today, sometimes we say, oh, they're just being dramatic. Maybe. Maybe they are just being dramatic, but I'm going to tell you, drama is a very hurtful thing. And it takes God helping us to recognize that we're part of the problem sometimes. You know that Jacob, when he made Joseph his coat of many colors, probably didn't realize how much he was adding to the drama. You know how much Jacob suffered emotionally, mentally? You know how much it hurt him to have that much drama in his life? You remember when the boys went down, I'm just going to say it that way, the boys went down to Egypt because they heard there was grain down there, and they come back and said, Daddy, we can't go back until we take Benjamin. He said, why did you tell him you had Benjamin? He said, well, he asked us if we had any, how many brothers there were. And we had to tell the truth, and we had to tell him we still had a little brother back at the house. Oh, I wish you hadn't have told him that. And it come down that they were hungry again, and they said, we got to go get some food or we're going to die. We got to take Benjamin. He said, no, you can't take him. I'll die if he goes. You see how drama was hurting Jacob? Jacob suffered and suffered and suffered because of drama. And not all of it, but some of it was his fault. And if you're hurting today because of drama, did you know that some of it is probably something you could help with? And I'd just like to ask us this morning, maybe this is not a very emotional message or whatever, but I'd just like for us to search our hearts today. The drama that we're dealing with that's hurting us, I'd like for us to ask a question of ourselves. What can I do to keep from perpetuating it? You know, I don't know what kind of inner questions Joseph had, but I'd like to look at his story. Not now. I've been here long enough. I'd like for us to look at his story and wonder, how did Joseph come to the place that he was able to rise above the drama of the past? And he was able to be, you know, Joseph is one of those types of Christ in the Old Testament. And Joseph, I believe, got a victory where Jacob didn't. Jacob passed on drama that he was handed that was not his fault. And he passed it on and then he suffered. It's like Jesus told Peter, "Peter, put up your sword." I'll read that again to you. "They that take the sword shall perish with the sword." Those that continually make jabs, it's going to keep hurting. We got to quit making those jabs. We got to quit poking and prodding. Does it hurt when people, you know, all Peter could see was somebody's coming to take Jesus away from me, and I'm not going to let that happen. It was a self-defense thing, and he took a swipe at him. Jesus had a better solution. You know, I believe Jesus has got a better solution for us. I don't like the impact of drama, and I want to minimize it in my life. It's not because drama don't happen to me. I want to minimize it with the help of the Lord. You pray for me.